This is March 25th, 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Podcast, episode 4. If you weren't making a face, we'd be on the fucking road to this podcast.
It sounds fucking terrible.
That's why I'm saying it like that, because it's horrible.
I want this podcast to be bullshit.
This March 24, 2010, this Idle Thumbs 4. This the March 24, 2010, this the Idle Thumbs Podcast 4.
And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Steve Gaynor.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
That was a good intro.
Oh, I try every week.
What's up?
Good job, Jake.
What's up, guys?
Hey, Steve.
You guys want to talk about video games?
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, all right. I guess since we're all here.
Yeah, and these microphones also are.
They're turned on and recording a thing.
Mm-hmm.
The sounds of your voice.
The stars are aligned. Let's take advantage of this unique opportunity.
Yeah.
Did you guys see Nintendo announced a video game system today?
Oh, they announced 3D Studio.
Oh, right.
I did see that.
The Nintendo Autodesk 3DS Max 4.
Exactly. Well, that'll be the incremental upgrade to the 3DS. Will be the 3DS Max.
The 3DS Max. I hope so.
I really do hope so. I actually saw the headline and didn't bother clicking it because I was like, that seems like something I don't care about.
The headline was pretty much all that was actually revealed.
The press release was hysterical.
But I mean, they didn't talk about what it.
No, like, it was just like
how it was accomplished or what it was.
On a date, Nintendo will announce a 3DS.
Oh, okay.
Temporary title.
Mm. But it was not even said. It wasn't even a temporary title. It was
the Nintendo 3DS temp.
Temp. They released this hilarious press release that was about 4 sentences long in like 3 different fonts for no reason.
It looked like a hilarious like advertisement from
Old
the
West,
like 1800s like, or something. Yeah.
Because
it was a shitty version of it.
It was like all sort of stretched super block type and
what?
Like only the names of things were like triple bold and like horizontally like
and
wide
the,
and stuff.
The last sentence of the first paragraph just halfway through is bolded for no reason.
Yeah.
I didn't see the actual press release.
It looks like it was reporting that the Titanic sank or something.
Yeah, it's too bad we don't have it available to read, but this was Nintendo's entire press rollout for announcing this system for the first time ever was this like 2-paragraph garbage shitty looking press release. And this is
that
a
was
company
basically
that,
just saying we're going to actually announce it later.
Yeah, but okay. I mean, Nintendo these days is all about having really strong centralized branding and like rolling things out on a worldwide thing, and like it was like in the middle of the night, because I guess it was in the day during Japan. It was like in the middle of the night they just stuck out this shitty press release.
The wires
like,
are lighting up or whatever. Yeah.
Have this.
Maybe it wasn't real. Maybe you guys got punked.
We checked like a lot. We checked the URL frequently to make sure it was Nintendo because it was such a stupid looking thing.
You're sure Ashton Kutcher isn't involved?
He could be involved.
You guys aren't being punked here.
Nintendo could have hired him as their new design director of hardware.
Please punk our audience, yeah. Ashton.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to not announce a 3D, or we're going to not make it, but send out a sweet press release.
That looks lame. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Owned.
That'll show them.
Worst.
And it's especially funny that they did this before the new DS even comes out.
Oh,
they
the DS Max.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the DS Max.
Yeah. That comes out in this country, I think, next month or something.
Yeah.
Or like in a few weeks. I don't know.
They're a weird company.
Yeah. That was a strange thing to do. I mean, I've already seen a bunch of people who have canceled pre-orders for that thing specifically for that reason.
What's the motivation to buy the DS wide load version anyway, though? It's like, it's just like a DS, but the pixels are way bigger and chunkier.
It's if you're an old person.
But like those people are going to be like, oh, fuck, 3DS announcement announced. I got to cancel my DS Max.
All right, I guess that's true, but I mean...
How much bigger is the DS Max compared
to... It's like three times as big. It's like the iPad.
It is, really?
No.
Okay,
amazing,
how much bigger
though,
is
but
it?
But it's still like 100 by 50 pixels.
Not really. I mean, each screen is the size of an iPad.
Oh, that's
so
true. It's like that Microsoft book thing.
Notebook? Yeah, the thing.
Oh, I forget what that thing's called.
Courier?
Yeah, it's like it's like the Courier.
It's like Courier.
But only one of the screens is touch sensitive, and there's a D-pad the size of like a shoebox over there. It's fucked up.
So
it's
you can pre-order these now?
Yeah, well, they're out in Japan. Okay. My uncle told me that he knows someone in Japan that's totally out there. And you can totally get it. Yeah.
Then I'm going to pre-order it because that sounds sweet.
You have to get it over off of Lixang.
I think Sony killed them or something. Yeah, didn't that happen? Now?
Because of the huge wave of DSi XL pre-orders. The threat to the new PSP. What the fuck are we talking about?
I'm just picturing a dystopian near future where Sony has death squads that they send out because it's like, you know, corporate controlled world, and they just sent a bunch of Black Ops guys to kill Lixang, literally.
Well, they didn't kill them, but they did make them lawsuited away.
Yeah, but
I think you're missing Steve's hypothetical scenario.
Oh, well, in the future, it will actually just be a bunch of fucking big dogs.
going
exactly. Oh, you'll hear you'll hear 300 swarms of bees.
You know, Big Dog.
That fucking
Big
YouTube dog? Video of the robot that walks like a dog and slips on the ice and stuff. Oh god, terrifying.
That looks like two guys that are like walking. And you saw the parody where it was just two guys under a sheet that was really convincing. Oh, that was good. Big Dog is sweet. Anyway, so Sony...
I think Jake is terrified of Big Dog.
I hate the Big Dog so much. It's because there was one day when I was just kicking it on YouTube, like I do, and I saw the Big Dogs video, and I saw a video of a guy who had just homemade built a like paintball turret just with a webcam that would never miss him no matter how much he tried to dodge it. And I watched those back to back and was like, oh fuck, wait a minute.
With these technologies combined.
Like if the military just bought both of those things, and the Big Dog is like, this thing can just carry like your fucking Volkswagen van on its back and it's fine on any terrain.
Yeah.
So that thing plus...
So attach an auto-targeting murder gun to a Big Dog.
It's okay
and just,
though, because it's just paintballs.
And send it down to Lixang.
So that's true.
There's nothing to
the
worry.
Government made a mistake and literally licensed that guy's homemade paintball TF2 turret or whatever.
Yeah.
That was a foolish move. They should have put bullets in it.
No, they didn't think of that.
That's an interesting strategy for Sony, though, to buy Big Dogs and put auto turrets on them and send them.
It stops those mod chip manufacturers, though. Holy fuck.
Wow.
Yeah. The mod scene is pretty much dead now that robotic dogs can saw down your door and then bullet you.
It is effective.
Yeah.
Well, developers really needed them to do something about PSP piracy. They were, you know, banging down the doors, and Sony responded with Big Dogs.
That was some really interesting video game news.
I know. I think we covered all the angles on the video games just now.
Yeah.
Are you looking for something, Jake? I keep thinking you're looking...
I'm trying to find the press release, but...
Oh, right.
The one notable thing about this DS is that it allegedly will let you use 3D without glasses. That's what Nintendo... Yeah. So that's the one like little bombastic Iwata mustache twirl that was thrown into that press release.
If you can use 3D without glasses, then I will finally like 3D. I would have, if I could have a monitor that just had 3D images that I could just look at, that would be awesome.
Those exist, but they're expensive.
Do they actually exist?
Yeah.
Without any kind of stereoscopic glasses or polarized glasses
but
or
most
anything?
Of them require you to have a pretty fixed angle of viewing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but I mean, you know, if it's on your wall and you're sitting on your couch, that's feasible.
Yeah.
Is this one of the quotes from the press release that I'm just looking at Shaq News and it just says... wrapped in quotes is Nintendo 3DS Temp is going to be the new portable game machine to succeed Nintendo DS series, whose cumulative consolidated sales from Nintendo amounted to 125 million units as of the end of December 2009. That's like a third of the press release.
Yep.
I love it. So they announced it's going to replace the DS line. Yeah,
right. It's the new DS, the whole, as opposed to the
it's
like
not
million
like a, it's
little
not one
replacements.
Of the branches,
But one assumes you can still play DS games on it.
It says DS in the title.
Right.
Yeah, it's backwards compatible, I believe. And it's which you know, it's
it makes all your old DS games 3D. Wow.
Oh man, it's like when the Game Boy Color made all your old Game Boy games.
It's like her Virtual Boy joke. Derp derp. Oh, sorry, that's what the internet did today. I think.
Really?
Probably.
I didn't even see that. I guess it probably.
Actually, I think what it actually did was what I exactly just did. It's like, oh, people make jokes about Virtual Boy, like wrapped in
before Virtual Boy.
Right.
Joke.
Exactly. The internet was in before the Virtual Boy joke today. Unfortunately, all of it was. So that sort of came back around.
I did see a Virtual Boy joke.
I saw a picture of Chris looking at a Virtual Boy and then having a seizure and passing out on the ground.
Oh, yeah, that happened
at
one
the
time.
Classic Games Expo in 2006.
Yeah.
What?
This content is not available on idlethumbs.net because it's hard to find.
It's available, but it's like our entire website.
It's like if you go to old.idlethumbs.net/articles/36.php=?read it.
Don't actually go there because it won't.
That's not a real URL.
It's similar to what a real URL on our website would be.
Yeah.
Yes.
Man, it's a good thing we're getting all this great discussion, and I'm really enjoying this.
So for those of you just tuning in to Idle Thumbs, this is what our podcast is like all the time. It probably is, actually.
Fact.
Guys played any sweet video games this week?
I encountered Jackie Rodkins in Bioshock 2, and that made me very happy. But that's all that I did other than making a game.
I'm glad that it made you happy.
It did.
That is the goal of doing that kind of thing. And
to
also,
make one person, please.
Happy. Well... You put a reference to someone's name in a game, you kind of hope that that person thinks it's good.
Well,
you also amuse yourself, but that you could do that in a lot of different ways.
It's true.
There's actually, pay very close attention to the opening of Sam & Max 301.
Oh my god.
I might have reciprocated. There might be a little Scoops present in that.
I'll take it. Oh, you told me about this, actually.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, yeah. Now I remember you telling me about it.
If you
it.
Look closely, there are some hot Scoops involved.
Now the readers can look closely because you haven't told them about what it is. Keep your eye out. Buy Telltale Games video games.
And also buy Bioshock 2 and buy a subscription to Gamma Sutra Premium.
Or Game Developer Magazine.
Oh, right. You actually do sell something.
You sell that thing that I've only ever gotten for free.
Yeah. Well, you're a video game professional.
Yeah, but I was getting it back when I was writing for idlethumbs.net. I guess I was at that point. I was in QA. I think I did say, "Give me one because I'm in QA."
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're in QA, you can get one. Yeah,
I mean, you're employed by a video game developer.
Yeah,
best episode.
It's a good episode.
Are you guys having fun with this episode?
Oh,
yeah,
I love
it. Pretty great. It's
so
my favorite.
So you
one,
were
probably.
Playing games, probably. I've heard mention of some sort of Metro 2033, some sort of other game.
Yeah,
you were skydiving recently after a helicopter in a different game.
Yeah, I've played 3 video games this week.
Wow.
Actually, 4.
Whoa. All right. I saw. I
wasn't impressed by 4, but 3 was...
Well, see, because...
Or 4.
Well, because for me, I wasn't, you know, shocked by the 3, but I didn't see 4 coming.
Oh, man. Well, that's what I do. I'm like M. Night Shyamalan there.
So what was your first... One is StarCraft 2.
StarCraft 2 is number one.
Oh, what's so the other one?
In terms of hours
played,
right?
Not anymore. What? No. That has never been true.
You're like the masters, right? Like everybody else has to fight you to be the best?
It's true. We are the best StarCraft players in the world. It was surprising to us, too, because...
Because Korea still exists.
That country has not yet been overrun by big dogs, so... Nick and I might be... Limited.
Jake just got physically grossed out by the idea of Korea being overrun by big dogs. It made you do the face.
No, but you guys are... You're moving
but I mean,
up.
You are going
we're
up.
Moving
you're
up.
Moving
we're in the Silver League now. We've improved a lot since we started playing.
That's like the senior citizens.
Yeah, right. Man, you guys remember those Centrum Silver commercials? I always never knew what those meant.
Yeah, but you're in the Centrum Silver League of StarCraft 2 co-op.
So we're in the Silver, which is the, I guess, the middle one, basically. I mean, there's copper, there's bronze, like, silver, gold, platinum. So
platinum.
The Silver League is a good one, but it's not for super expert pros. but you know,
which is the official BattleNet term for that rank?
Total rad rank.
Your total rad rank is super expert pro.
Yeah, they went in a weird direction with the league system. but no, it's really good. I've been getting a lot better. I'm actually better now at StarCraft 2 than I ever was at StarCraft 1, which is interesting.
Like it's because Nick is your mentor. He's taking you under his wing.
Yeah, and it's not even so much that as much as
as you're his mentor.
I think more of it is just that I'm actually on a league now that I can aspire to improve in. Whereas in StarCraft 1, sort of just being on the ladder was already ridiculously difficult competition.
You sign in to be rolled, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
You are done.
Yeah. Whereas in this, they have this whole really intricate ladder system, and they tie accounts to a CD key, so you can't just make a new one and then start over low and, you know, completely destroy people because you no longer are ranked. Like, it's really well thought through, and it means that the goal is, you know, get everyone to basically have about a 50-50 win-loss ratio and just keep refining what league you're in and how far along that league you are until you get to that point. And it's surprisingly good. Like, it's a lot. I mean, there are, you know, you still get those times where you just destroy someone completely or are completely destroyed within 30 seconds or whatever. But for the most part, it's a really good matchmaking system. And I've totally gotten involved now in, this is the dorkiest goddamn thing ever, but whatever, it's a video game podcast. Like watching, you
which
know,
is already the dorkiest thing ever.
Exactly. So I can't really top that.
You're doubling down on the dork.
Right. But I'm watching all these games that are commentated by people and like actually watching different commentators and like finding the commentators I
so
like
more.
So
you're actually having a StarCraft 2 like training montage going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Except that it's just you clicking through various like movie playback controllers right. on the internet.
Click. Yeah. But it's good. I mean, there's actually, I didn't even realize there was such a big community of people who
like StarCraft.
Well, who actually commentate on it and have this whole, like, there's even within the commentator community, there is the range of, you know, the guy who commentates stuff in a way that's really graspable and he kind of describes what's going on in really elementary terms. He knows what's going on to a high degree, but he says things in a way that you can understand even if you're not crazy. And then there's the guys who are super analytical and super predictive and infer crazy things about strategy just by the tiniest move someone makes and can, you know, read really far into their intentions. And then there's guys in the middle. It's really cool.
So how long until you and Nick start your like StarCraft commentator series?
I would never have the confidence to do that ever. Actually, one of the things I've really been imagining a lot lately is one of these guys commentating one of my matches, like, because it would be fucking hilarious.
Well, because always like, oh, doing the classic. Oh exactly, no, he's not. Yeah. Oh, he's just fucking it up.
These guys will, you know, the most mundane things will cause these guys to realize something. You know,
right.
Like, oh man, he's putting the forge up now instead of, you know, 10 seconds later. They wouldn't say it in those terms, but they'll make an observation that equates to that, and it's like, what? I built it then just because it's when my guy walked over there. And, you know, he's like, oh, man, he's going for the early forge expand. And I'm like, And so I can imagine one of these guys commentating one of my games and having all of the, like, oh, fascinating. I've never seen a player do this before. He's taking 3 probes over here, building it. He must be going for an extreme fast deny the expansion. Like, oh, well, those guys are dying now. I see. These guys are doing well. Keeping his cards close to his chest, I see. Like, I don't know. I would like to see someone do that just to see what.
It seems like this guy likes how the tank looks.
Exactly, yeah.
Because he's making a lot of them and zooming in.
So I would like to see someone try to read into my strategies until they realize there's nothing to read.
This guy loves clicking on the unit 15 times to hear all the different things that it can say.
So, anyway, StarCraft 2 is good. It's just the biggest thing I've gotten out of being so into this game, which I never was to this extent with StarCraft 1, really, is just realizing how there's always another layer of depth. It's just, it's crazy. I don't think I'm aware of, and I'm not to say there aren't examples of this, but I'm not aware of any other game that has such a well-explored labyrinth of depth to it, you know, where you can play at so many levels of skill, and there's all, like, there's this whole metagame that all the commentators and people who cover the scene follow, which is how, you know, people will come up with these strategies that seem unbeatable, and then some pro will figure out a way to counter it that no one else had ever thought of before, and then that strategy will slowly seep down and trickle down until it's kind of permeated out to the whole StarCraft community, and then someone will come up with some other amazingly crazy strategy that no one had ever thought of before, and then a pro will counter that, and it'll trickle down. And it's this whole, it just, that's why StarCraft is still so popular, because it actually supports that level of intricacy and long-term evolution. It's really fascinating. And I can just imagine developing this game would have to be the most stressful, like, just ridiculously high-pressure thing to have expected of you.
This onion that you keep peeling back and back and back and back and back.
Yeah.
And then in the very middle of it, there's one Korean man saying, I got here first. And
Well, it's fucked up because
but he's holding an onion.
And you have to start peeling that.
You start
one.
Peeling that, and then it's like Men in Black and this little plant inside it.
But there's always just a small Korean man inside. It's like an onion that's a Russian doll that's filled with Korean people.
Well, that actually is a better analogy, because that's what it's. I mean, the crazy thing about this game is that it's like pro sports, which is that after a few years, guys just can't keep up anymore. Like, even the crazy total pro Koreans, like, after a few years,
they split in half and a smaller Korean comes out of them?
It's weird, actually. They had to breed special people. No, but they, you know, like, they'll stick around in the scene, but then they'll kind of fall down in the ranks and they
start commentating instead.
They do.
And oh, then, man,
or
amazing.
They and
then,
or they start coaching teams and stuff. It's actually really interesting. It really acts like
do they get the like sports, the sort of like windbreakers sports. That say StarCraft on the back?
I don't know, but have you ever seen what the pro Koreans wear?
Mm-mm.
They wear these hilarious like jumpsuit, like I don't know.
Like a speed suit?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, basically. It's really hilarious, actually.
Good, good.
I don't really understand how that developed, but there must be some reason.
Yeah, it's because they're hardcore.
Yeah. Anyway, StarCraft is a crazy thing.
So you're going to get one of those that says Idle Thumbs on it?
Yes.
That'd be amazing.
We sell them from Cafe Press.
Just straight to Cafe Press.
Yeah. Idlethumbs.starcraft.cafepress.com?
Yeah. Don't go there.
You should.
Yeah.
You should go to idlethumbs.cafepress.com, though, because you might find a horrible old Idle Thumbs store.
Oh, yeah. You can still buy Idle Thumbs stuff.
I think you can buy
Cafe Press is not the thing that we ended like.
Oh, no, but there's an older one on Cafe Press.
Right.
Where you can buy a license plate holder that says, my other car is a booth babe.
Worst. Yeah. You guys suck.
It was from like 6 years ago.
Yeah, it was before my time. After that, you guys made the other one that was better that I have a bag from.
Yeah.
That uses what is
Spreadshirt.
It? Yeah, Spreadshirt. That's
Yeah. If you want a t-shirt that says Idle Thumbs in the Top Gun logo, you can go to idlethumbs.spreadshirt.com.
Which is actually awesome. That's a really nice shirt.
Yeah, it's a really nice shirt.
I also have a bag that says 8-slot bag on it and Idle Thumbs on the back, which is another good item.
Yep.
You can get those two things.
Hey, if you want, but you don't have to.
Well, you could.
Also, we don't make any money off of them because I lost that account information.
Is your old apartment getting a check every 6 months or something?
I don't think anyone buys enough off it anyway. Also, I don't know if it's even marked up anymore.
Yeah.
We used to make like 50 cents per purchase, and then we'd get a check if we sold $25 worth of merchandise or something. So this is a video game related
episode.
This
is our best podcast, probably.
Whatever. Fuck that. It's fine. Everyone hates it.
I'm sorry if you've stopped listening already because of the podcast. But you're not hearing this, so fuck you.
Yeah.
What else? What other video games did you play?
I played Metro 2033.
Yeah, what do you think of that? Some of the guys at work are really into it.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
There's some things about it.
Should I play it?
I don't know. Well, maybe. Probably not.
Hmm. Should I play it?
You would be more into it for sure, yeah.
I was pleased just by reading either you or Nick or someone talking about going into a Metro and hearing a billion people walking around talking and existing independently of each other, if only in audio. That made me pleased.
Yeah, you can see them, but there's cool stuff like, I mean, the game takes place largely in metro tunnels after a, surprise, surprise, because it's a Russian game, after a horrible cataclysmic event.
Right.
But the cool thing, one of my favorite parts of the game is in between the actual missions, you are in these little metro station bases, and they're just totally packed with human warmth and people talking and laughing and crying. Yeah, sorry. People
kindness.
Going through all kinds of different conversations and goals
behaviors.
And all different things. Yeah, it's all completely canned. You know, there's nothing about it that's dynamic whatsoever. But
so you're just living inside of an extreme real-time 3D movie,
yeah,
basically.
And it's just really cool. You walk through it and you'll hear people arguing about something and kind of peek behind the door and kind of see what's going on, but can't really get to them. And it feels more like a live,
sorry,
like what it's trying to be than I've seen in most games. You know, like they give up, obviously, the...
we're under arrest.
It's true. They give up some of the systemic stuff that a lot of games try to do that with in favor of just trying to make it really, really high density.
Like just keep the atmosphere up.
Exactly, yeah. Cool. And they really only exist to walk through. It's almost like Pirates of the Caribbean or something, but it sells it really well, I think.
You'll hate it, Steve.
I don't know if I would. I did see there was a gargoyle that knocked over a truck.
Yes, that happens really early in the game, actually.
So you're sold on that, though.
I guess you've determined it's a gargoyle. I don't know. It's some kind of monster thing.
It looks like a gargoyle to me. I mean,
from Disney's Gargoyles
TV show.
It's like a gray creature man with big wings that flies around. Yeah. I don't know if it's anything except a gargoyle.
That had not occurred to me, but you've opened my eyes.
I'm glad I could help.
Open your eyes to gargoyles.
Apparently a nuclear holocaust or whatever.
It brings gargoyles to life.
Brings all the gargoyles within the blast radius to life and they start attacking the human survivors.
Is that what you were
going to
say too? It's well documented.
There were not very many gargoyles.
Is that what happened in the Gargoyles TV show?
Yeah, that was a post-apocalyptic nuclear TV show.
I don't know.
What?
I didn't watch
it. No, it fucking wasn't.
Well, what happened then?
Gargoyles just could come to life because of magic, and then Deanna Troi
nuclear weapons detonated in metropolitan areas full of gargoyles. So right. This
but if there were,
often.
Then...
Because there aren't very many gargoyles in Japan.
Yeah. They have Godzillas, though.
It's a different phenomenon, but it's related. How much do you like it?
I like it a
1 lot. 1 to 10. It's... Fun factor, tilt.
It's super ultra linear in the sense sound. In the sense that
what's your sound score?
Oh, the sound score, it's pretty good, I guess. I don't know, like an 8.
Okay,
I don't know.
8.8. Oh shit, that's almost a 9.
Yeah, yeah.
That's round that up to a 9.
All right, so the game has really good sound.
I've seen some people don't like the mixing as much, but I'm usually not as sensitive to that, so I don't know.
I'm glad you actually have things to say about the sound, well, including public feelings about this.
People have actually argued specifically about that aspect of the game on the Idle Thumbs forums, so...
Oh, well, that's why we brought it up.
Weird.
You guys,
yeah, well, it's because totally I read that. It is like super roller coaster, right?
It's ultra linear,
just
yeah.
Go forward.
It's like super roller coaster.
Tycoon.
Three? Max? To the max?
What?
Sorry. What game are we talking about?
Sorry.
Are we talking about 3DS Max again?
We're ruining your talk about this Metro.
Yeah, it's quite linear. It's developed by a bunch of guys who worked on the first Stalker game.
Right.
Which makes it particularly interesting that it's so linear.
Yeah, it's like a reaction to Stalker by those guys.
I think
basically.
So, yeah. And
because it has a lot in common, like, fictionally and everything. Like, there are anomalies and stuff, right?
Right. But yeah. But because, actually, it's based on another Russian book, which, I mean, Stalker is sort of inspired by a work of literature, but Metro 2033 seems to be... and I don't even know if the source materials has been translated into English, but it seems like it follows it a lot more closely, which makes sense considering it's such a linear game. And there's in between... One of the reasons I don't mind that it's so linear is because... Well, one, it's bookended by all these cool little Metro sequences that I really like. Yeah. But also, it's got this very overtly literary narration that pops up. So it's the game is, you know, in the same way that a book or a film is narrated... This is what you're playing is what the guy remembers and what he's recounting in this book that he's writing down. Mm. And so you get this little narration in between the various stages of the game as the guy recounts what happened and talks about things. And so it makes the game almost more of a series of vignettes than a really kind of straight ahead narrative.
Yeah. How's the shooting? What about when you shoot a mutant?
It's good. It's interesting, actually. One of the things they did draw from the tradition of weird Russian nonlinear games is just the fiddliness of all of the low-level systems.
Yeah.
So you have to do a lot of scouring for ammo. You can do all kinds of... manipulate all kinds of little knobs and stuff on your items. Like, there's a...
What do you mean?
It applies in different ways to different things. So there's a like a pneumatic... gun that you can fire that's kind of used as a stealthy kind of sniper weapon, sort of, and you can actually like pump it so you can increase the pressure, and so it'll fire faster when you do that, but you know, after time it'll lose air pressure, and then you've got to do it again if you want to keep firing in that mode.
Weird.
Just stuff like that. There's also a gas mask,
yeah,
and like the way you check your oxygen level is by looking at an in-game wristwatch that comes up and which is ticking down to how much time, you know, you have left until...
Yeah, how much oxygen you have left, basically. Or, I read about this. It's like filters are, like, the resource for it, right?
Right. Oh, there's a cool thing Jake would like, actually. There's a...
Tell him about it.
There's a little objective screen, which is not really necessary because it's so linear, but you bring it up by actually bringing up a little pad...
In-world inventory
that,
stuff.
That your guy
my
looks at, yeah.
Thing.
But the best part is... Since it's just written on paper, it's just scribbled on paper, your other hand can bring up a little lighter that you can flick on and the guy will hold it up to the paper. And those are both done independently. So you can do just one or just the other or both, like whenever you want.
That's my favorite thing.
So you can pull up a lighter just to light
the
area.
Just to illuminate your objective when you're in the dark.
And it's
hilarious.
Well, you don't need to because you have a flashlight on your helmet. But I mean,
but
it's just
funnier
it's a cool thing to
be in a dark area and just pull your lighter out.
And the lighter is a cool little like unspent shell that flicks open. It's just a cool...
That's my favorite thing. Like,
It's awesome.
I really liked that Far Cry 2. I liked that the map was a thing that you held.
Yeah. I think that's a thing that games are starting to like and want to do.
It makes me happy because
I like it.
I mean, I probably told this when we were talking about Far Cry 2 a lot a year ago, but my favorite stupid moment...
I don't think it stopped a year ago.
In the first 20 minutes of that game, I got in a Jeep and started... I pulled the map out and started looking at it, and then was so busy looking at the map that I drove my car into a river, and I was really pleased.
That's the best thing.
Yeah. It is good.
It's like real life.
It is good.
It's like all those times,
it's like all the times you did that.
Yeah.
It's like when you text on the 101.
Yeah, I guess it is like all those people who actually do that.
Yeah. But they don't drive their car into rivers. Some people probably do.
That's
drive
what I mean, actually.
But
I mean, like, people do stuff
like
that.
It's nice in a video game, you don't think that that consequence is going to exist. Yeah. It's like, oh, fuck, wait, I was just sitting there staring at a map while putting my foot on the accelerator of the car.
Yeah, I think pretty much everybody who's played that game has had that experience at least once where you're like, oh, wait, where am I going? And then you look up through the windshield and you see that there's a tree.
Yeah, it's really good. So, way to go, games. But you can't burn your objectives page, can you?
No, you can't.
That'd be my favorite thing ever.
I know. I actually tried to use
try to get the hand and the lighter to collide.
And I tried lighting other stuff on fire with the lighter. It doesn't do that. It's fine.
It would be terrible
if
that happened.
It's a cool thing. I know. And the game is not built for that. It's a very guided game.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I like it. It's cool.
Do you shoot dudes or just mutants?
Both.
Okay.
As in
mutants
pretty much
dudes.
As in pretty much every game, I prefer when you shoot dudes, but this game also has mutants in it.
I'll shoot a dude if given
Can you
the
shoot dogs?
Opportunity.
I mean, there's dog-like.
Can you eat their food for health?
You cannot do that.
Can you eat their flesh?
You cannot eat their food nor their flesh. Right. No, nor.
Well, because that was a great experience that was the implied narrative for me of like my first playthrough of Fallout 3 was like you play through your whole life of being in this very civilized vault, you know, and you're growing up and having a birthday party and everything, and then all the crazy shit happens and I like talked my way out of the vault and, you know, get out without killing the overseer and everything. I go out and then like I'm like, oh, the outside world. And I just like instantly go feral because like the first thing I do is run out, a dog attacks me, I shoot it, then loot it and take its flesh and then eat it. And so it's like this guy that he's like grown up totally normal his whole life. And as soon as he sees the sun, he's like, like devours a stray irradiated dog.
Yeah.
I love it. It was fun.
You're
implications
gonna have a horrible
of
life.
Systems. Yeah. Well, because in the game, you're just very calmly just like, walk around. Oh, I put that in my inventory. What's your third game?
Game 3. Oh, we have those, right? The little bumpers in between each of these. Let's throw those in.
Yeah. Okay. Just Cause 2.
We just saw you playing that.
Yeah.
You can grapple.
You can grapple.
You can attach your grapple to two different things.
Which pretty much makes it a game that I will already be interested in, because anything with the grappling hook... half sold to begin with.
Much like Bionic Commando?
Yes. That was not a good game, but you know, I appreciated that someone tried to make a game with a grappling hook. It's just too bad it wasn't a good game.
But this game...
This game I enjoy a lot more than that game. I actually had never played Just Cause or really known anything about it or known where it was. And the Just Cause 2 demo came out, and a few days ago I kind of just downloaded it. I saw it on Steam and figured, why not? I'll try it out. And I guess it's just a game that is basically all the stuff that you can do just dicking around in the worlds of games like GTA 4 that has nothing to do with missions. This game just amplifies those to a ridiculous degree and just is comprised of that.
Yeah.
Plus a grappling hand.
I mean, plus elements that allow you to, you know,
plus a grappling hook and a parachute. Basically.
Exactly. Infinite parachutes that
that's good.
You can dispose of. Continuously.
Oh, do they get this? I assume it just retracted.
You just deploy them. You have a parachute factory on your back.
But in any case, yeah. I mean, it's one of those games like Mercenaries or Crackdown or, you know.
Yeah, it's similar to Crackdown in that respect, which I also really liked.
And you love Steve.
Steve does not love.
I'm not into it. What?
Nothing. I've never played Crackdown.
Well, just this kind of game is so undirected and just it feels like there's no consequence to anything that I'm just like, it's really hard for me to care about anything I do in it, you know? It's just like, well, I am an invincible superhero ball of chaos. And yeah, it's true that I am able to fuck around, but like, I don't feel like there's any motivation to do so for me. Like, I don't get enough of a visceral thrill out of look, I fucked around to, like, be absorbed in it for very long, you know?
Yeah.
But that's just my own personal, like, what I'm looking for out of that kind of game. Like, the polar opposite is way more attractive to me, like, right. of GTA 4, where it's like, you are closer to being equal with any other.
I would say. Because, I mean, to me, you
definitely are more survivable.
A structured sandbox game, like, you prefer when there is some element of...
Because, I mean, GTA 4, you can't... I mean, the stuff you can do in GTA 4 is totally ludicrous. You know what I mean? Like, there's no...
But within the world, you are much closer to being an equal with any other character in that world than you are in Crackdown or Just Cause.
Right,
like,
yeah.
You're much more fragile comparatively.
Certainly compared to those games,
like,
yes.
You can't, you know, jump 30 stories and you don't, you know, have super crazy abilities that nobody else has or anything. You definitely... The odds are skewed in your favor, but you do have to, like, buy a bulletproof vest to not be killed quickly and, you know, buy a new one when it wears out and just all that kind of stuff, you know? You get hurt and have to eat a hot dog, you know, not just, like, recharge your health.
Well,
I don't know, just, like...
Just Cause 2, you don't have powers or anything. You mainly just have equipment.
But you essentially do. Like, for all intents and purposes, you are superhuman.
By the same token, you can take way more damage than anyone else in the world of GTA... And have amazing, superhuman targeting. You can lock onto someone while flying through the air. I mean, you effectively have...
Can you?
Doesn't the game have locked targeting on? Locking?
Yeah, but I mean, you do not spend very much...
targeting on
locking.
You don't spend much time flying through the air, though.
But I mean, you can...
You do when you're mean. You just go off jumps on a motorcycle all day.
Well, you can't lock on while you're driving.
You can jump out of a motorcycle.
And then lock on...
You can't lock on while you're flying
through
the air.
And then you can fucking grapple onto a helicopter and parachute the fuck out of there.
I don't know. I mean, anyway. You can essentially act like a superhuman in GTA 4 to an extent. I mean, it's not...
Yeah,
my point is that I wouldn't consider it the polar opposite. I would consider it
I'm saying
over on the spectrum.
My own personal interest is the polar opposite. GTA 4 may not actually be that, but it is so much closer.
Right. Oh, I'd be interested to see someone try
existing
that. Yeah.
As an equal to everybody else in a clockwork open world city. You know, that's where my interest lies. Like,
if someone were to do that, I would be totally interested in it.
And that's what I like about GTA 4 is that it gets closer than other games of that scope and style to that endpoint than really anything else that's been released.
No, I totally agree with you, and I would love someone to do that. The thing that I don't like about GTA 4, and I love GTA 4 a lot, don't get me wrong. When I say the thing I don't like about it, I don't mean the reason I don't like it. I mean, the thing that I don't like as much is just the huge dissonance between the really grounded cutscenes and story and the level of just utterly insane carnage you can wreak if you want. Like,
yeah,
because I will do that. Like, I will just dick around and go nuts. And so
make 1,000 cars explode.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Stuff.
And I mean, I think there's even achievements for stuff like that. Like, the
game
certainly,
there are achievements for,
like,
blow up 10 cars in 5 seconds or something.
And
why would they not put that in there?
I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying that it's just reinforcement that the game systems support that.
Yeah.
And so the reason I like games like Crackdown and Just Cause is because they tie that to the theme of the game. They essentially make that, like, the world itself acknowledges that, as opposed to GTA, where the world kind of just turns a blind eye and says, we'll let you do this. And then we're just going to snap back into this other thing right now because we need to for the story. And so the reason I like games like Crackdown and Just Cause separately, I mean, is because I also enjoy those interactions. And it's cool being able to do them in a world where they're fully supported.
To.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like when you played GTA 4, at least your first time through, did you go off jumps and blow shit up? Or did you try to actually role play it?
I went off jumps.
Well,
but,
everyone goes off jumps.
Right. I mean, but intentionally, like, I'm going to go look for a ramp or whatever. But I mean, yeah, like... I was much more sympathetic to the playing the game the way that the cutscenes implied because I saw the potential for playing it that way, and so I did. And so, yeah, I was way less just like, I'm going to create a massive amount of chaos between missions. I mostly went mission to mission and sort of explored the city in a more low-key way between missions as opposed to like, okay, I finished that mission, now it's my chance to explode 100 cars and go crazy. So, yeah, I probably enjoyed the game more on that level because I didn't really have the urge to go wild because I was like, oh, man, I can actually keep myself to some degree in this, you know, aesthetic state because I'm able to maintain that if I want to. So I kind of did. You know?
Right. Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. For me, it always ends up being a function of like my energy level at any given time. Like paradoxically, when I'm maybe not paradoxically, actually this happens with a lot of games, but when I'm feeling less focused and less driven, that's when I'll turn into just Destructo Man.
Yeah.
Basically, like I'll be relaxing. I'll be like, yeah. I'll be tired.
Mash car.
Yeah, exactly. No, and it's, I've always found that really interesting because open world stuff and sort of emergent gameplay in general is predicated a lot more on just kind of the breadth of player input. But for me, at least, and probably for a lot of people, it ends up corresponding with the player being less concerned with the inputs. And so those things end up magnifying each other for just chaos.
Well, yeah, basically. It's just when you don't want to be precise, when you just sort of want to smash things and see what they crash into, that's, you know, when you find all that weird shit. Yeah.
And Red Faction Guerrilla is sort of the same. Actually, Just Cause 2 reminds me of Red Faction Guerrilla for different reasons. There's nothing dynamically destructible in Just Cause. There's tons of stuff to blow up, but it's all scripted in there.
Yeah.
But
it's either blown up or not.
Exactly, yeah. But that it does have that same thing where there are mission objectives to do, and you can sort of do them while just wreaking havoc in the most outrageous way. But it's fun. I mean, I didn't play Just Cause 1, but from everyone who have seen talking about it, it seems like they really learned a lot, because I think they tried a lot of the crazy interactions that they've now figured out to a better degree. I mean, mm-hmm. just crazy shit. Like, you can just fly out of cars whenever you want into your parachute and grapple onto something and get into these cycles of grappling and then parachuting. And the thing that I love about stuff like that is not so much necessarily that I'm blowing stuff up. Like, that's fun to kind of just do idly. But the thing that is always so appealing to me about games like this is that you can get really in tune with the game's how it lets you explore spaces. Like, that's what I really liked about Crackdown, and that's what I weirdly liked about Trine. Like, they're games that allow you to take some mechanics and string them together in ways that allow you to navigate a space really fluidly. Mm. And like Spider-Man games did that really well, for example. Stuff like that is extremely appealing to me. And that's why I like grappling hooks so much, because they're almost entirely intended to facilitate that.
I wonder if that goes hand in hand with the sort of person who likes jumping perpetually in a game that's supposed to just be a running game.
Pretty much. Like, I jump a lot.
I wonder if that's like, because you probably don't do that, Steve.
No, not really.
But you, Chris, I know, are just like hop, 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 hop. Like, you and I both played Psychonauts just on the fucking ball.
Exactly.
Bouncing at full force through every level until you got to a point where you had to not do that or you'd die.
Yeah. No, essentially, I just really love kineticism in games. Like, I love movement and like any mechanics dealing with that. And so, yeah, I will try a lot of different games that support that, and a lot of them aren't good, but some of them are, and then I'm happy.
Yeah, see, I mean, because I love games where the default is to be as, like, low-key as possible. Right. Like, that's what I like about, for instance, since we're on the, like, GTA 4, your default movement is walk, and you have to hold down A to run, and you have to tap A to sprint, and it's like, we are actually going to just, like, softly discourage you from trying to act crazy in this world, and like you're going to default to walking around like a normal person, and you actually have to work to kind of like break out of the expectations of the rest of the crowd and everything.
I love that GTA 4 did that, but I also will happily play a game that lets me do all sorts of stupid shit wall jumping and grappling all over the fucking place.
I guess I feel like on some level it works less well for me when it is in a semi-realistic world, you know? Like, Just Cause 2 takes place in some analog to what? Like, Thailand or something like that?
Yeah, basically.
And, like, Mercenaries takes place in, I think, actually, Mercenaries 2 takes place in Venezuela. Yeah, and just stuff like that. And it's like, if your game is all about these pretty abstract, exaggerated verbs, I would rather enjoy them in a much more fictionalized world. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, I liked flipping my hot rod off of stuff a lot in Brutal Legend because it was crazy metal world, you know, but
that makes sense. I can see that.
If it was supposed to be an actual place, it would kind of be like, well, this is not anything like an actual place because this fucking crazy hot rod guy would not be doing backflips, you know, in this real place.
That makes sense. I guess for me, it sort of ends up possibly coincidentally coinciding with me just really loving huge, detailed, gorgeous landscapes. Like, in the same way that I like, you know, nature photography and, like, the film Kind of Scotsy and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, those things may not be for the same reason, but I like when a game will allow me to be on a parachute, like in Just Cause 2, for example, and just soar over this beautiful island that it just looks like a real thing in our world.
No, I think that's totally... I really like that as well. I was... I love being able to see the entire city or the entire XYZ. Super impressive. I mean, like getting up on a ridge in Fallout 3 and just seeing the whole wasteland out in front of you. Yeah, just that stuff is great. It's wonderful.
Yep. Scale in games is good.
Sweet.
People having a sweet game engine.
How about the fourth game? Since we're just going down this list.
Oh, yeah. Four. I don't even know if there are actually four. I think there might even be more than that. But
Jesus, Chris.
Are we going to unlock a fifth game at the end of this
you
number
can
four?
Try.
What does that
can
mean?
Try your hand at unlocking a game. No, I played Shatter.
The Master of Unlocking?
What?
Oh, sorry. Oh, I was killed for saying Master of Unlocking.
Oh, man. I didn't even realize what you said.
That's okay.
Now I know. I played Shatter, which is... what?
I don't know. I don't know anything about this game.
It's a puzzle game that's ostensibly kind of in the music rhythm puzzle genre, like Luminex. You guys are horrible.
I apologize.
That's fine.
I don't. I do.
Oh, that's good.
Mm. You break blocks.
You break blocks
to solve
a
puzzle.
And it's pretty fun. I played it for a couple hours, but... Wow. It came out on Steam and people said it was good, and I like games that are
good.
Sort of rhythmically based. Well, that puzzle games with rhythm stuff in them.
What's the word for it?
I don't even really know. I don't know if it's actually a term.
No, I mean the word like res, where they sync up your the sounds of your actions with a beat.
Oh, well, they don't in this game, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
But it's quantization.
Quantization.
But they don't in this game. It would be difficult since it's entirely due to just, you know, simulating physics on when the ball hits your paddle.
It's entirely doo-doo.
You did say that.
It is poop. No. it's a pretty good game, but it wasn't...
It didn't blow
your mind. It doesn't seem like I could play it indefinitely, basically, which is what you kind of look for in a game like this, pretty much. And
you look for a year of your life being slugged
exactly,
on the drain
yeah,
to Meteos.
Right. Exactly, yeah. Meteos was definitely that for me, as was Luminous. And,
there's a game that I played that I think has quantization in it that you also played, which was Chime.
Yeah, that game's that's actually a really good game.
Chime?
Cool. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, sure. It's Chime is the first game that was released by that company called One Big Game, which like donates a lot of their proceeds from the game that they make.
All profits, actually. They're a non-profit company.
Yeah. And it was something like, when you buy it, it says like something like 60% of the proceeds or of
the
what you're paying.
Price, yeah,
it goes to charity. But, It's a pretty interesting game where essentially there's, I don't know, it's sort of like Tetris meets Luminous. Like, it has elements of both of those, but then I don't actually know how to just, you know. So anyway, you have a board that's empty, and they give you shapes that are kind of like more complex Tetris shapes.
Like a Tetromino?
I don't know.
Pretty sure that's what it's called.
But there's music playing in the background that's very simplistic, and you put down these pieces on the board to make quads that are like, I think the smallest one is like 3x3. And when you get a quad, it fills up that part of the board permanently, and your goal is to place these complex shapes and arrangements that make these solid fields, and then fill up the entire board by the end. And the more quads you've put down, the more layers of the background music play. And
cool.
The quantization is that, like Luminous, there's this like, you know, kind of beam that sweeps over it and
like a timeline.
And counts off the pieces that you've turned into quads, like as it passes them, and those sounds work into the song. And they have songs by like Philip Glass and Moby, and the one that I like the best is the one that's in the demo.
The Wizard by Chris Ramos.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I was really pleased they put that in there.
Yeah, well, because you get like a big quad, and it just goes, Wizard! Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
So you should buy that because it's an Idle Thumbs game. They made a game about Idle Thumbs.
Yeah.
What was the song you actually liked?
By Orbital, that's right.
Mm. Not as good as The Wizard.
No. But kind of good.
It's pretty good.
And I played it, and I was like, this is really interesting. You can play with a time limit or not, just to see how much you can fill it up. And I was like, this has a lot of things in it that it seems like this would be Chris Remo's favorite game.
Yeah, no, it's quite good. I enjoyed it.
It's music-based, it's puzzle-based, and it has quantization, which is like a thing that you love.
I do love it.
And it has Philip Glass and other...
Exactly, and I really like the Philip Glass track, yeah.
Sweet.
It's cool.
What were
cool
your impressions
game.
Of it?
I liked it. I totally forgot that it came out when it came out. So I haven't actually bought it yet, but I have played it for a few hours. They brought it to our office last year before it came out.
Yeah.
And And it's really cool.
Yeah. I played it because I heard it. I saw a few different people online saying they had been playing it and they liked it. And so I tried the demo and it had that one Orbital track on it. And I was like, oh, I like this song. And this is a pretty fun game.
Insta-buy.
I bought it. I put my dollars in it.
Oh, man.
It has a little bit of a weird, like, the feeling of progression is strange. Like, you know, have you played, you know, I guess you've only played the demo?
No, I played the full game.
Oh, but when they brought it to your office?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it's like you can play it with these different time limits, and it judges you on right, how yeah. much you fill up before the time limit ends. But, like, I don't know. The actual goals to shoot for are not, like, super clear or compelling. No, it's just sort of like you can play it, yeah. and if you want to play it, you can play it. It's just kind of like, okay, that's
well,
cool.
Well, yeah, they were saying that they found that different people pick up on that stuff to very different degrees. Like the person that they found to be the best, you know, the best runs they saw were from a guy who was a programmer and was able to just quickly in his head think of all the ways these things could fit together and just really quickly slam them down there.
Yeah.
Before the timeline would come across, and I guess this, because it is abstract in that respect. It's hard to get your head around exactly what you're working for on the kind of low level.
Yeah.
But also, it's fun to play.
Yeah, but they also have a pretty low bar for progression, where it's
exactly,
like,
yeah.
you right. have to clear 50% of the board to get the next
doable.
Thing.
Yeah.
And then you unlock them all, and then it's sort of like, I don't know why I keep playing this, except just I like to put the
right.
blocks on the area yeah. and hear the music.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's just not super compelling. It's just nice. Yeah,
exactly. It's a thing you just kind of do. And just yeah.
There have been a few times since I bought it that I was just like, oh, you know, I do kind of feel like playing a video game, but not one that I actually want to have to, like, care about a whole lot, and I'll just play this for 10 minutes and have a nice song.
Right.
And it's nice. It's good.
Yep.
Sweet.
What kind of breaks do you guys like? Do you like breaks from podcasts?
I do.
Yeah.
I'm giving you one now.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Video
games! We didn't play Metro 2033 or StarCraft 2.
That's your problem right there.
Fair enough.
I'll play Metro 2033.
You should. You might like it.
I would play it.
You hate it.
Yeah, I didn't mean you
I would play
I don't
it.
Know if you necessarily wouldn't like it. I just mean, between the two of you, it's probably yeah. more likely Jake's kind of game.
I mean, the thing is, I like things like that when they're really good.
Right.
I liked the Call of Duty 4 campaign because it was just right. really well done and sure. enjoyable for what it was. Just a lot of times people are like, all right, we're going to lock you onto this roller coaster track, and it's not actually going to be that interesting, but you can't actually do anything except
right.
this.
Right.
I'm like, that's a bad idea. So you really have to nail it, but if you do it, then, you know,
maybe
I'm
did.
Into it.
Maybe
I mean, it sounds like it has enough weird, low level, just kind of what are you guys doing mechanics?
All the weapons have weird knobs,
pumps,
yeah. I mean, like metaphorical
yeah.
levers and pumps and knobs that you can. Just
which
yeah.
which are
your
which
ship.
Are not actually metaphorical. You actually
yeah,
have a pump on them and you
are
pump
they,
it.
Yeah, well, no, there's all kinds of actual like. Literally, they animated all these cool little mechanical things where you will take your gun and the guy will like lift it up and you'll like click the mouse and he'll go chunk and he'll do it at the number of times you
yeah.
click. Like stuff like that is awesome.
Oh, it sounds sweet.
Yeah. yeah. Not obviously, some guns are just a pistol and nothing happens to
what,
it.
It needs but, to have at least one modifier.
Oh, and then there's this guy. I didn't even talk about the money system. That's really fascinating.
Go ahead and talk about it.
It doesn't matter.
Well, tell us about it.
Yeah.
It's like the currency in the game, like it's linear and you can never go back to somewhere.
Yeah,
but all the bases have merchants. What
yeah.
are you doing? What are you?
I don't know.
Twitched.
You just said all the base, and I was going to say our belong to us.
But then this was
yeah.
you erasing that thought from your mind.
yeah.
oh, get it out of there.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to shake our belong to us out of my ear and
right.
make it fly into your apartment, hide under the couch.
Our belong to us.
was that
wild.
Escaping?
It
was
yeah.
forcing its way out.
Yes.
So yeah, money system.
Yeah. Oh, so there's merchants that you can buy, you know, weapons and health and ammo from, but the currency is ammo.
Yeah.
The currency is pre-war ammo basically that is clean and well manufactured as opposed to ammo after the war or whatever. Well, I don't even remember whatever it was. That's shitty and kind of cobbled together, and you can use that ammo in your actual guns. And so,
and it's more effective.
It's way more effective. It's actually effective. You know, your other ammo is just it's shitty stuff that you spray out, basically.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that until...
You get sweet ammo.
Yeah. You start out with it. You start out with some of the good ammo because it is your money. And so the game
yeah.
starts you off with a certain quantity of money. And so I didn't spend any of it at first, when I was in the first location, because you don't have enough of it really to get anything good. So I'm like, I'll just hang on to this. And then I didn't use any of it in the first battle. And I finally, at the end of, I don't know, the second segment or third segment of the game or something, we'd gotten to a safe house area, and the guys weren't letting us in because all these mutants started pouring out and attacking us, and they didn't want to open the doors. And so, you know, as in many video games, you have to fight off these waves of guys before you can keep going.
Yeah.
And I had run out until I had no regular ammo left. And so I brought out my knife, which you always have.
Yeah.
And, you know, with all my memories of Stalker in my head, I'm like, oh, man, knives cut through mutants like fucking nothing. This is going to be a cinch. That's not true in this game. That might be true in Stalker, but not so much Metro 2033. A knife actually acts more like how it probably would act in this situation.
And not be exceptionally effective. Yeah.
Like, oh, God, stab, stab, stab. And, like, they will fuck you up, you know,
right,
while you're trying to do that. And so I'm like, oh, God, this is horrible. And so I switched over to the gold ammo, like the good ammo, which is bright and shiny and very noticeable.
Yeah.
And, like, you just, you know, these guys go down like nothing when you fire this stuff into them. But the counter is you're basically firing money.
You're shooting dollars at
you
them.
You are ejecting money out of your gun. It's horrible. Like, you're doing it and you're like, oh, this is great. These guys are going down so easy. Oh, this is horrible. All my money, I'm pissing it away through the barrel of this gun. This is awful. It's a really interesting
That kind of decision sounds fun. It's really cool. Interesting to me.
It's a very cool decision. They're actually, I should have talked more about this game in a more interesting way.
You are doing it now.
Well, I guess I'm doing it now. But I had some amazing moments in this game. Like, I mentioned the
ice maker out in the
I mentioned hall. My weird apartment noises.
Your robot pal?
My big dog.
Your big dog?
He only comes out when he's asleep. Oh,
it's a big dog.
That's what he says. Oh, it's a big dog. Like, it's me. It's a big dog.
Turn it on. It's a big dog.
Oh, he's shooting paintballs at me. Oh, I can't hide.
He's made of bees.
What was a moment?
Okay, so I... this is actually... I have not played the game since this happened. I was in some area. It was actually one of the first times you're out on the surface instead of in the metro stations, other than the very beginning of the game. And I was kind of with a buddy. We were an NPC buddy. We were going around, and we get separated. He makes it across this chasm, and I don't. And I've got to find another way around. And I was just kind of dicking around. Like, even in linear games, I usually try to push the boundaries of exploration as far as possible, just because it's what I do. And I was not really paying any attention to how much to my filters as they were running low in my mask. And I suddenly started, it was happening so slowly that I didn't realize for a while. And I suddenly started to notice the things were kind of getting blurry at the edges and things were kind of getting soft. And I'm like, oh man, what's going on here? And then I realized my guy's breathing was audible and I was hearing it. And I'm like, oh God, I'm probably running out of shit. And I look at my watch and I'm almost out. I'm like, oh fuck, this is bad. And I start going around and I start running and jumping and trying to get anywhere that I can to scavenge for more filters.
I started running.
I know, exactly. I started panicking. And like it starts getting really extreme. Your guy starts, you know, my guy started breathing really heavily and panting and his vision was becoming really cloudy. And then as I was going into this, I don't know if it was inside or just kind of a garage-like area.
Yeah.
I went into this big, and I saw this blurry shape in the darkness kind of move. And I'm like, oh, fuck, what is that? And then this mutant comes charging out of nowhere at me. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And at this point, I could see almost nothing. Like, it was my guy was basically losing his vision entirely.
Yeah.
And just go, horrible. It was awful. And I bring out my gun and I just spray bullets everywhere completely haphazardly. And the mutant dies. And I'm like, it was such a horrible moment of like a bittersweet victory over this opponent because I had put down this enemy, but my guy at this point is basically scraping along. And he just, at a certain point when you have no filters left, your guy will just rip off the gas mask and just gasp for air, even though there's no breathable air there.
Yeah.
And so I just slowly asphyxiated and just died on the spot after killing this mutant. And it was easily one of the most harrowing, terrifying, panic-inducing moments I've had in a video game because they sell it so well with the vision going and the guy panting and breathing and everything constricting. No, and
it sounds amazing. It sounds...
It is incredible.
It sounds literally nightmarish. Like, that is a nightmare that someone would definitely have.
Yes. And then
which is awesome.
At that point, I basically hit Alt F4 and quit to my desktop immediately and have not loaded the game since then because it was fucking nuts. And in fact, since then, I took a day off work last week after GDC and this was last Friday and I was going to load the game up because I had some free time and I'm like, all right, I'll play the Metro 2033, whatever the game is, number. But it was a nice day out. The weather got better after GDC's ridiculousness. And it was like bright outside and it was daytime. And I'm like, I can't play this game right now.
You can't
right
go to
now.
The Russian wasteland.
Yeah. And I couldn't bring myself to do it. I had my mouse like hovering over it on the Steam thing. And I'm like, this is just not
going to asphyxiate myself not while work. Killing a mutant.
Yeah. And so I need to, I can't wait to go back and play some more. But that was definitely an experience that impacted me so much that it made me only want to play the game when I could like enhance that experience.
Well, I mean, you're hovering your mouse cursor over the icon of just outside the window. You're just hearing like robins chirping.
Exactly,
and just a sunbeam kind of goes,
are you sure you want to enter your worst nightmare?
Maybe I'll go outside and then do that later.
Exactly, So it was cool. I enjoyed that experience, even though it was horrible.
All right, I'll play it.
Okay.
Sold!
You owe Chris a check. Russian men.
Yeah, 4A games. Oh, also, it's funny. This game seems to be displacing Crysis as finally the new game people are using to push
crazy
systems.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I mean, it seems quite scalable.
It doesn't seem like it has crazy good graphics, does it?
It basically, it's not as overt as Crysis, and it's definitely a very, very scalable game. You don't actually need a ridiculous computer to run it, but it has, unlike a lot of multi-platform games, because it's on 360 as well, it has... if you want absurdly high resolution textures on the PC, which is really nice because these days a lot of PC games just ship with like console resolution textures and they just did not scale any of that shit back on the PC if you actually turn all the graphics up. And so you can turn this game into just a completely computer destroying beast that actually looks pretty amazing. Like some of the screenshots people have taken where they just pumped everything up to maximum.
Yeah.
Like it's one of those games where you can take screenshots and be like, Jesus, the background of this is a painting.
Yeah.
You know, like it's harder to tell because you don't get those big vistas like Crysis has, but it's kind of the indoor equivalent of that.
I don't even know how people get those Crysis screenshots because it's like, I don't even think if I turned everything up to max and was running at one frame per second.
I think Crysis actually has like a mode that is just like one step closer to impossible mode, basically, where it will just go.
I mean, those people also use mods to have like modded lighting that looks better than the shipping lighting.
There are mods that people have actually just made, but there are also just config files. Like, you can go and just push stuff to an even more extreme degree by editing just some config files in the game and just really cranking
stuff. You can
just
enable system ruination through text files.
But at this point, people are now, like, modding... Actually, I just saw the other day someone's crazy, particle mod for Crysis that just replaces the particle effects for explosions and stuff to just amazingly realistic extents. People are still... doing interesting things to that game and engine. It's cool.
I was playing some game recently that had really impressive, like, real-time, you know, light rays coming through trees and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was something that... I can't remember what the fuck it was, but I was, like, impressed because...
It was Tropico 3.
Mm. That game does have nice rays coming through.
Yeah, it does.
Does it?
Yeah.
When do you see them?
When the sun is setting and rising, if you look out over the tree line, the haze is real. Yeah. Is done in real time. It's a really weird, surprisingly impressive effect.
Well,
to pop up.
One of my favorite things to do in city building games like that is to zoom in the camera and then angle it out more horizontally, so you can kind of look over your civilization or city or whatever laterally. Yeah. And then at that point in Tropico 3, especially if it's dusk, you get these amazing light rays kind of pouring over your city. It's awesome.
I think it might have actually been the Just Cause 2 demo.
Just Cause 2 has amazing light rays stuff.
And I think I was really impressed because
Amazing rays.
Well, I played it on 360, so I think I was extra impressed that they had that level of
your 360 was making amazing rays?
Yeah. Like,
that's the technical term for
lighting.
Amazing rays?
Yeah, it's amazing rays. Discount volumetric light rays.
Good times.
No, the game sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's a cool game. I hope it actually does well because no one's talking about it, really.
Is it a game gold? Gold game?
And, you know, also I wanted
to... I've heard people talking about it, but it's been on the internet and in a video game development office.
Right,
so.
Yeah. It's also not like, you know, Steve, you mentioned you're happy to play a game that's super linear if it's of the quality of, for example, Call of Duty Modern Warfare or whatever. This game is not as... Like, there are a lot of things about this game that are not perfect. You know what I mean? It's not...
But it sounds like
a hugely super...
But it does sound like it makes up for those with other weird, off-the-beaten-path things.
Which I love.
So. Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in stuff like that, where it's like, we're going to do, weird, pumpable weapons and, like, heavy, you know, the spaces you were talking about that have all the NPC crowds and stuff like that. It sounds worth checking out for sure.
Yep.
Cool. So we're going to take a real break now?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, I thought we were going to read her mail.
Yeah, but we have to find them.
Oh, you guys, I thought you had them.
Video games!
Oh, they're picked out. Ready?
Farewell. We'll be back after this break.
No.
Video games!
God damn it. We all have beards.
That's gross.
Sorry, Steve.
There shouldn't be three bearded men all speaking into microphones at the same time.
Well,
the beard cast.
Yeah.
Beard cast confirmed.
Who here is best without a beard? Who's had their beard the longest?
I've had my beard since 2002.
All right.
I don't remember, but probably about then.
Your beard comes on.
Yeah, you shave your beard off sometimes, though, so you can't even count as that.
But I've probably had the most extreme beard out of anyone in this room.
That may be true.
Could be true.
Yeah, I've had my beard probably since about the same time you have.
You should shave your beard because that would be amusing to me.
I do occasionally shave it, but
really?
I shave it specifically.
But then you hide from us for 2 weeks.
I shave it like once a year to put on face paint for Dia de los Muertos. So you've seen pictures of me without my beard, but I have a skull face.
You have other shit on your face instead. I want to see you with no shit on your face.
You're going to have shit on your face.
Yeah. You gonna poop on it?
That was the implication.
Oh, man.
So we're back. Oh,
near podcast.
Go.
Wow.
Thumbs. Speaking of thumbs.
So that was the What You've Been Playing segment. Now it's time for reader mail.
Also, though, first, Jake and I at least are going to be at PAX this week.
Yeah, we have a surprise edition of Chris Ramo. At PAX East.
Yeah, I'm going to go there.
This weekend. I will definitely not be there.
Steve hates PAX.
Yes.
I don't know if you give a shit about PAX either way, but you hate it the most.
I've never been to a PAX or anywhere near it.
Well, Chris and I are gone.
For good reason.
Yeah. Well, because I'm not allowed.
Oh, man, you're not allowed to go to PAX.
They banned me from it.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah. Even after never having been there?
Yeah.
They preemptively banned
you.
Well,
why do you think I've never been there?
Well, the first one was called the Penny Arcade Expo, Steve Gaynor is not welcome at this event.
It was a weirdly cumbersome title.
Yeah. If you look at the small print on your ticket, it says it on the back. So you guys are going, though.
Yeah. So
go there.
If anyone listening to this is going, we might have some sort of get-together thing, the most informal one possible. We don't know what day or time it would be.
Except that you have to wear a black tie.
That's true.
You can wear any other clothes, but a tie that is black is required.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In all other ways, it's completely informal.
Yeah.
But we'll...
Nothing but a black tie.
We'll post something on
for example.
You are setting yourself up for a bad situation, friend.
Yeah. We don't know what it is or when or whatever, but it'll probably just be us going to a bar or something super awesome like that.
We'll post it on a blog, our blog, idlethumbs.net, the website blog.
And maybe on a Twitter.
I think you will on a Twitter.
On a forum, maybe.
I think you will on a Twitter, a forum, and a blog.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for committing to something you have no involvement in.
And the Idle Thumbs Facebook page.
I forgot that exists.
we're gonna get this out virally through the social
networking.
Also,
we're going to update the voicemail message on 555 Wizard On.
In fact, it will only be...
Oh, you mean 55Y Aramo? Or whatever
yes,
that is?
That will be the only venue through which we announce.
To find the date and time...
Call 1-900-55-Y-Aramo.
That will launch an ARG.
Yeah, log into the Idle Thumbs BBS.
The most nerdy person will show up for this and nobody else.
I decoded your slow scan television signal. It said wizard.
I deduced you went to the wizard's lair, a bar, 18 miles out of Boston. You weren't there, though.
called Sweet Arg.
I'm going to go to a bar called the Wizard's Lair.
Yeah.
I went to a bar on the Oregon coast called the Ghost Hole.
Nice.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's awesome. It was a karaoke bar. It was surreal.
That reminds me. Someone made a website of one of last week's or 2 weeks
Brecken
ago
and
one
Bindburn?
Of our jokes. Yeah, there's a, if you go to BreckenBindburn.com.
Oh, I thought it wasn't. I thought it was Boost Bindburn.
Well, it's Nick Brecken and Boost Bindburn.
Attorneys at law.
Attorneys at law.
I want to go to this site now.
So if you it's a good site.
Is it Brecken and Bindburn?
No, I think it's BreckenBindburn.com. Yeah. And they, right. this the reason it reminded me of this is because this law firm is apparently located in Wizard, Colorado.
Yeah, you sent me that URL, and I just sort of gave it a passing glance. I'm like, oh man, what a hilarious name for a law firm. It's like the sort of thing we would say on our phone.
And then, yeah, failure. Like 5 minutes later, I was like, yeah, anyway, I forgot about this joke entirely. And you were like, wait, what?
Yeah. Oh, wait, look at this. All this text is about wizards and shit.
So it's good. Someone made a good website. I don't even know who it was, but someone made it. Anyway, PAX. We're going to post something on our website about going to PAX and being at PAX and maybe having a beer at PAX. All
right.
And maybe you can do that with us.
PAX, PAX, PAX.
And maybe if a couple people show up, we will talk to you and go and get a drink. And that's about it.
And
we
Chris is
going to
actually do a live performance of The Wizard and the Fanboys Lament.
I will have no instruments on me.
Bring your guitar. Fans. For Chris Remo to play
and
live.
If you bring a kazoo, that would be acceptable.
Yeah, that would also be
well, because then Jake will help out.
Right.
Well, it has to be a baboo kazoo.
Nobody knows what that means.
I know. We almost made Idle Thumbs co-branded kazoos for PAX last year, but it was too expensive.
Yeah, the
baboo
kazoo.
We almost brought baboo kazoos.
I so like hearing about them.
Yeah, so there's that.
There's also a mail from a
there
reader.
Are some mails. Also, just as a side note, we get a lot more mail than we used to now, so if I don't read your mail, it's possible it's because it was bad, but it's more likely it's just because we get a ton of mail now. So
yeah, we don't know what that's about because we stopped doing the podcast for like 3 months, and that made more people write in every
it made
week.
More well there was you know
there
so
was
much time went without questions being answered that when we came back
we sort
there was a
spun
flood
that
yeah
the big old hatch open and then just email deluge.
We had to relaunch it up the profile.
Then we had to close it again, but Nick was still in there. It was too late, though, because that bulkhead had flooded.
He's dead.
So we drowned Nick.
He's trapped in there with a whole bunch of sweet reader mail, though.
Oh, okay.
So maybe if we keep reading reader mail...
Nick will escape?
Nick will escape.
Makes sense. Okay.
Wait.
Moving on.
So you're
Zach
saying they
Johnson
have to stop
writes,
writing reader mail? So that
we don't know what we're saying.
No.
Zach Johnson writes,
save
hey guys,
Nick. Don't write any more questions on idlethumbs.net. He's going to drown if you write us an email.
And that'll be on you. The readers.
Well, let's get some of that. Let's get some of that reader mail out of the chamber, man. We got to save
right,
his ass.
Okay, okay. So as I was saying,
Jack mail chamber.
Zach yeah. Johnson writes, tweaking randomness. Hey guys, I was listening to the GDC grenade and wanted to bring up something I find interesting about the notion of altering randomness in games to improve the player experience. In our game, Kingdom of Loathing, although you don't have to mention it to avoid having it sound like a plug, I just mentioned it. We do a lot of this, he says. We refer to it as massaged randomness. We tweak values in ways that we think improve the feel of the game, prevent randomized events from becoming streaky or repetitive, flatten out curves to stop a small portion of players from experiencing a boring long tail, that kind of thing. There's a danger, though, that when players learn the methods we use for these tweaks, they'll start doing weird shit to take advantage of them, and that makes it even harder to balance everything. It can create a situation where the optimal way for a player to do something is tedious or time-consuming or heavy on bookkeeping, but usually it just ends with players doing things that don't make any narrative sense. If a Civ-type game made it more likely for you to win a battle after you lost one, I can imagine shrewd players taking advantage of this by fighting unimportant battles until they lost one, then fighting an important one when they know the game is stacking the odds a little more in their favor. It's not a big deal playing against the computer, but it seems like a bullshit move in multiplayer. Also, the reward-punishment framing decision, buy one, get one free, afterwards reminded me of a joke my dad made years ago. He suggested that Circle K should change its coffee slogan from tastes great or it's free to tastes like shit or you have to pay for it. Zach. That's good. I think that's an interesting email. And actually, Civilization Revolution, I actually felt, was kind of broken in that respect. I think they went a little overboard on that stuff. And the specific thing he mentions, fighting a less important battle before fighting an important one, I actually did that in Civilization Revolution a lot because I had started to perceive how that system worked over time. So yeah, it that game was not as kind of pure A-Civ as other ones, but yeah. It was still fun.
There's one major instance of that I know of from knowing how the systems work in BioShock 2.
Oh, yeah.
Not going to mention it.
Oh.
If you know what I'm talking, if because well, no, because the thing is, I don't know if people have actually divined it, and I don't really want to ruin that part of the game for people.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to know if people actually noted this thing that I know as being a degenerate strategy if you see through it. It's pretty friggin' like obscure to actually, I think, be able to tell without seeing the numbers. But I don't know. I'm probably going to look online and see if this thing that I'm thinking of has been found or not.
There's a thing in TF2 where people would shoot themselves in the face as a soldier repeatedly to so that the medic would give them an Uber quicker.
Oh, yeah.
Because
and then Valve originally, they designed around that, right?
I think that's still in. I don't really know because I don't ever play a soldier or medic.
I think what they did is, because people would always do it at the beginning of the game before the round started,
right?
Yeah,
it's in the setup time. They're just soldiers shooting at the ground.
I think Valve made it so that for that period of time, people who actually play this game more regularly will...
I don't actually know
this I'll thing. Be an idiot for not knowing it. But they did something so that you don't need to do that to get Uber by the time the gates open. Like, Valve saw people were doing that and made it so that you can just get there without having to abuse it, basically.
Which is smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes. Stuff like that happens in games.
Fact.
Jonathan 2 writes, "My mom... Dear Idle Thumbs, I showed Plants vs. Zombies to my mom a few months ago, and she really liked it. She plays it 15 hours a week on my Steam account, and the Steve looks quizzical."
15 hours a week?
Yeah.
That's a lot of them.
Yeah. And the most That's hours I have hours on any other game are Freedom Force, Half-Life 2, and Peggle at 20 hours each. She has now played Plants vs. Zombies for 170 hours on my account and refuses to buy it on her own account until it goes on sale. Sometimes I would be sitting upstairs on my computer, that go downstairs like for 30 seconds to use the bathroom or get my cell phone, and when I got back, she'd be on my computer because she was lying in wait. She has her own computer. Also, people think I'm weird for playing Plants vs. Zombies 13 times longer than I've played Team Fortress 2, because Steam tracks that publicly.
Buy your mom a gift.
Well, this is what
he
gets to this. I told my mom that she plays games more than I do, and she didn't believe me. Finally, I went through my entire catalog of 50 Steam games, listing how many hours I've played to her. Once she saw that in the few months she has played Plants vs. Zombies for more hours than I have in the entire 2 years of my Steam account, she said she wouldn't play on my Steam account anymore and seemed upset. Now I feel like an asshole. Should I buy her the game so I won't feel like an asshole?
Yes.
Or not, and reduce her addiction? Or should I buy her some other game?
Your mom obviously has like an emptiness in her life that she has to fill with something. So I think you should, you know, give her the game. Let her be happy. Yeah. Let your mom be happy.
Or just throw her for a loop and get her a copy of COGS. I just thought I'd recommend some other game.
So Jake recommends COGS. Steve recommends letting your mother be happy, Jonathan. So take either of those pieces of advice, COGS or happiness. It's up to you. John writes, "Seg, gentlemen of the Idle Thumbs podcast. What the fuck is up with your pronunciation of Segway? Is it an in-joke that I'm missing out on?"
Yes, it is.
It's from 2 years ago.
Yes.
Get with the fucking times.
Yeah, he includes a pronunciation note and says these things.
You're done. Next.
Well, yes, it's a stupid non-joke that was based on Nick Brecken actually believing the pronunciation of Segway was Seg, and Jake and I immediately jumped on him and have been saying it that way ever since.
I thought that he just shortened it for the sake of abbreviation.
Yeah,
I thought he said that was a nice Seg.
Exactly, that's what I thought it was.
Did he actually think that...
Oh, I thought that was, but I don't know. I mean, I can't...
I thought it was just somebody made a good Segway and it was like, nice Seg, like as a...
I guess
there
was an apostrophe there.
Yeah, it could be. I thought Nick just...
You were making fun of him for something
you thought Nick was just stupid.
We both thought Nick was clever. Nick Brecken, if you're listening to this, write into questions@idlethumbs.net.
Yeah, put this issue to rest. Doskius writes, "Raping Literature, dear the Idle Thumbs podcast, I don't have a question, just a game idea I thought was rad enough to share with you guys."
Wait a minute.
This is actually kind of clever, I think. "With Dante's Inferno behind us, I've started to wonder what the next literary classic is going to be, bent over the proverbial barrel by the games industry, and I realized which could be the easiest and most appropriate to adapt, Cervantes' Don Quixote."
Adapt becomes the new euphemism.
Yeah.
Which would be the easiest to adapt.
To adapt, in quotes.
Over a barrel.
Yeah. What's funny is that people already use words like exploit for that purpose.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
But this guy just said...
Yeah,
bend
I know.
Over a barrel and adapt in the ass, basically. All right. Go ahead, guy that wrote
assume
that.
Assume the adaptation position. So he continues, "The game will obviously play exactly like Shadow of the Colossus."
Wait, what was the game?
Don Quixote.
Okay.
The game would obviously play exactly like Shadow of the Colossus. You would roam a giant open world where you find, scale, and slay enormous monsters. Every time you defeat one, you'd get a little scene where a random townsperson would thank you for liberating their poor village from the creature. But as you ride off to your next adventure, the delusion would falter and you'd hear the guy shouting about how he can't grind oats anymore. At the end of the game, you'd get a long sweeping view of a bunch of destroyed windmills across the landscape and view all of the death and destruction you had caused. This reveal would be so gripping and emotional it would make you cry when it's released on the PS3 in 2015 under the title Shadow and the Colossus 2, Everything's Windmills Everywhere in Hell.
All right.
I really like that idea, actually. I think that's awesome. And I think that kind of thing, Steve, the reason I read this email is because Steve and I were talking about this kind of concept sort of...
over a game of Imperial 2030.
Yes, just on
those
Sunday.
The two of you guys and famous Vanneman.
Yeah.
I mean Sean Vanneman.
Well, he's famous for being Sean Vanneman, so...
Yeah, I love stuff like that, and I wish more games would mess with perception in that way. And that would be a cool way to represent Don Quixote in a game.
And that title would be a good title for it.
It would. That would be the correct title.
Although Shadow of the Colossus 2 is already coming out. It's Shadow and Colossus back in action.
Oh, right.
That's well documented.
Yes.
Buddy cop.
Yeah.
Movie.
Yeah.
Game.
But this the third Video one game. Being yeah. sort of like how the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean has licensed the book on Stranger Tides. If the third Shadow...
Wait, has it?
Yes.
Really?
Pirates of the Caribbean 4 is called Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides.
Weird.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
Not even in print anymore. I guess it will be now.
But yeah, we're talking. There's some graph on the Telltale Games forums that is like Pirates of the Caribbean, the ride, Monkey Island franchise, Pirates of the Caribbean, the movies, and on Stranger Tides, the book. And it is just like the analogy that I used at work was it's like a snake eating its own tail, except that it's a two-headed snake that's eating its own tail, and then the tail of an additional snake that is like. It's the weirdest fucking thing. It's that whole...
It's one crazy snake.
That whole nest of...
It sounds like it's multiple crazy snakes.
It's all snakes. It's all snakes eating each other.
It's all snakes all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a book that...
All snakes eating each other all the time.
Who was it by? Tim Powell or something?
Tim Powers. The book that Ron Gilbert was reading when making Monkey Island, plus the Pirates of the Caribbean ride was the other inspiration for that game. And then the Monkey Island games... were going to be adapted into a feature film at Industrial Light and Magic. They were trying to do an animation thing. They pitched it to the screenwriters of the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, and then a lot of the effects, the people who were working on the Monkey Island film ended up being the effects crew for the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, which was written by the guys who had been pitched the story for the Monkey Island film, and now they're adapting the book that was the inspiration for the Monkey Island game, which was also based on the ride Pirates of the Caribbean. So it's fucked up.
That is actually amazing.
That's an incredible... I didn't even realize there were that many interconnections.
Yeah,
I was aware of the thematic kind of progression. But
they all actually are completely... It's just this horrible... It's a thousand snakes eating
each other. And this book, it's the Olympic rings of things.
Snakes.
Also, this book has been out of print for a long time. I tried to track a copy down a while ago, and it's really expensive, but probably not anymore.
There was a really shitty paperback in print like within a couple months of that blog when Ron Gilbert first talked about that. I bought it.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's pretty good. It's back in print now, though.
Okay.
If you like sweet pirate stories, it's a good one.
Sweet.
What if you don't like pirates or stories?
But yeah, anyway.
You'll probably not like
so
it.
So in that
you'll
vein,
not like any aspect of it.
Shadow of the Colossus should totally license Don Quixote for the third game after the Buddy Cop one, which
right.
is the second one.
Right.
That franchise is going to shit.
All right, so
I like Shadow and Colossus.
Joseph Theron writes, "Funny games and jokes, dear idolatrous thumbs podcasters.
Make them laugh.
You had a good discussion about humor and games with Sean Vanneman, by whom I assume he means famous Vanneman.
He means Sean Vanneman. Sean famous Vanneman.
Right. Okay." I agree that it usually coexists with drama. However, you neglected entertainment like Airplane, which doesn't have a cohesive narrative. What you said in another discussion about knowing rules of composition so they can be broken intelligently is completely applicable to that movie. There's a great example of that. Based on the context of one scene, it seems like a character is looking into a mirror. Unexpectedly, the reflection of the character steps through the mirror and your brain explodes as you try to parse what just happened. Here are some flash games that subvert game concepts for laughs. Achievement unlocked, don't shit your pants, passage in 10 seconds, and you have to burn the rope. I know that the chances of someone making the Airplane of video games are slim to nil, but I feel like this branch of humor is a worthwhile tangent. Thanks for reading, Joseph from Austin, Texas.
We didn't talk about Airplane on the podcast, but Sean and I think we're actually talking about that at the Telltale booth right after the panel,
really?
Because it is, like... Airplane is one of the exceptions that proves the rule, kind of just like
which rule
of
comedy
coexisting. You can't just
drama.
Make a thing that is just
just jokes, like, jokes,
yeah,
gags, gags.
You can't
gags,
make
gags,
oops
yeah.
all jokes,
right.
but then it's like, well, what about Airplane? It's like, yeah, what about Airplane? That's like the one that does that right in the sort of that one little period of Zucker Brothers movies,
right?
And no one else does that in a way that's good. It's usually
It's usually horrible,
like scary
comedy
movie.
Adventure yeah. or romantic comedy or you know.
Well, or they do them, but they're shitty.
Or,
and
or someone tries it and fails horribly. But
or
I mean,
tries it, makes a shit ton of money off of it, and it's the Wayans brothers for the last 10 years.
But it's not good, like date yeah. movie or scary movie yeah. or
right.
whatever.
I'm not saying it's good. Yeah, I mean, I yeah. agree that it generally fails, but not necessarily because they don't do it. Just because they don't do it well.
Movies that are billed as a comedy are actually a funny romance movie or a funny yeah. adventure movie yeah. or a yeah. funny buddy cop movie yeah. or whatever.
But I mean, like, even Airplane
or Crime
basically evolved or, you know, came out of, like, old Mel Brooks movies, you know, like...
Weren't those basically contemporaries?
I thought that Airplane came out after, like, Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles and stuff.
Maybe so, but, I mean, those were still straight-up parodies of specific genres, yeah. whereas Airplane is just, like...
Well, Airplane was this parody of, at the time, the really successful disaster airplane disaster movies. Genre. Like, at the time,
true.
There were tons of movies that, not tons, but there were quite a few. It was like Volcanoes in the late 90s or whenever that was. And that movie
Armageddon.
Was like a direct response to those and has outlived all of those films.
Yeah, okay.
But there was, I think, a movie in that era called Airport. And it was like a serious
yeah,
movie. Yeah, exactly. And so Airplane was a direct satire of that.
I didn't know that. Secrets of Airplane.
The Airplane secrets revealed. Yeah, I think there were some adventure games that tried to be that and weren't good.
Oh, man. This is 100% unrelated.
That's okay. It's the Idle Thumbs podcast.
I had a really good experience with fan interpretation this week because I was looking on the BioShock wiki. And just to give props to those guys, I think the BioShock fan wiki is the most common tool that we used for reference for what was in BioShock 1 during the development
of
BioShock 2.
All the goddamn time at Telltale as well.
Like, I would be like, okay, so what audio logs were in BioShock 1? BioShock fan wiki, they've transcribed
right,
them all.
Of them.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
So thank you. but yeah, I looked up, I was looking up the different, like, consumables and stuff in BioShock 2 on the wiki because I wrote the descriptions for those, and so I looked up
on the wiki when it edited it with your account.
No,
oh,
I put them in the game. They put them in the wiki, and then I looked up the entry for Gainer Peaches, which, you know, have my name on them, and they're the canned fruit that you can eat in the game. And there's like under the it's like trivia or something. Some fan had put in an interpretation that was like, Gainer Peaches are the only kind of canned fruit that you find in Rapture in BioShock 2. One is led to believe that the Gainer Produce Corporation therefore had a monopoly on the tin fruit industry in Rapture. Like, I love that.
Yeah, that's really good.
People are funny and awesome.
But that's true, though, now. That's because,
I mean,
if someone ever makes BioShock 3, they're like, so what's the deal with Gainer Peaches? Okay. Yeah. I see. It's a monopoly.
I think that interpretation is based on the fact that I wrote a kind of long description for those, which was like,
because you were indulging yourself to the fucking max on it.
I absolutely was. Because I like Julie Langford from the first game from Arcadia, and she's not in BioShock 2 at all. But I use it as an excuse to write a quote from Julie Langford talking about how Gainer Peaches are the perfect food, and then it says like, quote from Julie Langford from a study.
Commissioned by the Gainer Produce Corporation.
Yeah, and so that led to the guy thinking, anyway,
maybe
stuff is
just
silly.
Yeah, that's
I like it. Thank you, fans.
All right, so Andreas
of the Idle
Slot
Thumbs podcast
writes, CPU Bach, hey bros. In the Conf Grenade, Chris suggested Sid Meier might be the Bach of game design, which seemed like a fairly apt analogy in my opinion, but it also reminded me of a game that Sid made after Civilization 1. CPU Bach. I don't know if this is real. You guys need to tell me if this is real.
MobyGames.com.
I have not seen it with my own eyes, but it's a 3DO exclusive title that generates music in the style of Johann Sebastian Bach with insightful information of how fugues work and things like that to go along with it, which interests me greatly. Have any of you heard of this? Is there a way I can experience it other than finding it and a 3DO on eBay? As a fan of both Bach and Sid Meier and CPUs, I feel like CPU Bach is something I should own. Maybe Firaxis could make a remake of it like they did with Pirates and Colonization. That would be sweet, Andre.
I mean, I have to. There's an emulator for everything, so I have to assume that there is at least a 3DO emulator. And if you could get your hands on a disc for it, then you could presumably make a program run.
Yeah, this actually exists for the 3DO, and it sounds kind of like if you guys read Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, that the program which was called Anthem, which was generated music from corporate charts and stuff. It sounds kind of like that, where from the Wikipedia description, it just procedurally generates hilarious fugues and then you get to watch 3D graphics dance around on your screen using your 3DO, apparently. So,
sweet.
Yeah. That's real. Real awesome.
Sounds pretty extreme.
The 90s were awesome for stuff like that. Like
weird shit.
It's like people will buy multimedia.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's many crazy things that were made like that and actually put on a shelf. It was a really strange time. Neil Fire writes, I posted a version of this on the Shack News, but I'd be interested in hearing the Idle Thumbs Council discuss it. Lots of games. I read this because I know Steve obviously is into this, as am I. Lots of games, especially shooters, take place in wastelands of one kind or another. System Shock 2, Bioshock, Stalker, the Fallout series, they all have settings where society and infrastructure has mainly gone, at least mostly, to hell. One of the reasons I enjoy Tron 2.0, Mirror's Edge, Deus Ex, and Oblivion is that they're set in functioning alternate worlds. I love Claustrophobia and Beartooth Survival as much as anyone, but often I want an immersion that's stimulating without being nerve-wracking. The worlds of those games are presented with various levels of detail and sophistication, but they're all coherent visions, with people going about their business within some massive socioeconomic structure. I'd imagine the creative demands for a game of this second type are fairly immense. It's easier just to provide hints of something that existed in the past than it is to conceive, flesh out, and build a game around a complete world that isn't just a mirror of our own or a variation on something well known like Tolkien fantasy. Maybe in the opening shot of the game you wake up in your sleeping pod and step out into a glowing blue network of network tubes and a tiny speckled pyramid floats past you, grumbling that it'll be late for the next quickening. What other games are like this? What setting would you like to see? What limitation is there to making such a game other than the sheer creative load? Regards, Neil.
Steve, speak.
So basically living world versus dead world or otherwise depopulated world.
Yeah, I think that's basically what he's getting at.
Yeah.
A world that is more vibrant and sort of maybe at its peak or somewhere near it rather than post.
Yeah, I think that the biggest challenges are just supporting the player being completely chaotic in that setting.
Easier to trash something that's already trashed.
In a
game where you can fire shotguns and everything.
Yeah, or more. I mean, to take the it costs twice if you only buy it costs more if you only buy one approach. It's hard to support those verbs when there's a bunch of functioning people around going about their normal lives, because it's like you freak them out and they have to do stuff, you know, or you have to restrict the player's ability to do stuff so that order is maintained. And that's generally the approach that seems to be taken in games like that, especially games that have sort of occupied zones and towns or whatever. It's like, we're going to make you put your guns away when there are neutral people around, you know, like Stalker, Call of Pripyat does that, and like Dragon Age does that. And, you know, you can't just go crazy on the people that are only there to be, you know, solid citizens.
Well, and there are some games, because the guy mentioned non-open world games as well. I mean, something like Hitman is entirely predicated on the notion that people will respond.
And I was going to bring that up because, those are very contained environments, but they are all about people going about their normal business and going through routines and stuff. And you are this little point of like potential extreme entropy at all times, and it's like, when am I going to unleash that and how? And the gameplay is actually about finding ways to be effective with those verbs while being while disrupting the overall system as little as possible, because the more disruptive you are to that system, the higher your chance of failure, and also the less kind of believable the game becomes,
and the less you can effectively actually do at all. I mean, even outside of the failure state, like you have fewer and fewer options, you know, the more you disrupt.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's a really interesting systemic balance, where it's like you have all the advantages when nobody's freaking out. And so to freak everybody out is, you have less incentive to do so. And they do support it when you do that, but almost just because they have to, not because like it's a feature, you know? And so that phase, you know, the you freaked everybody out phase is kind of lower fidelity in the behavior of everybody, but that's fine, because the people that have guns are going to be trying to kill you, and the people who don't are going to be running away.
Right.
And it's like, there you go. But yeah, like Hitman doesn't have any persistence, you know? If you do that and you die, you start over or load a game or whatever, you know? Whereas in GTA or something, you cause an enormous amount of entropy, die, and it essentially resets the state of the world and spawns you back, you know, at the hospital or whatever. So there isn't like persistence to your actions there. So it's basically always compromises. But the thing about it is that it always assumes that your verbs are based on destroying shit, right? So
video games.
Yeah. Or at least some of them are. And so probably the approach to take is to find mechanics that are nonviolent and also compelling to do, and then you can have a living world based on that, because there's
really
way less distress you can do. Exactly. That's the hard problem. That's why we don't see more of that, because the easiest thing to do in a video game is draw a line from the player to somewhere else and then take hit points off of it.
Right.
And we don't really know how to make a lot of other core interactions be as fun and as extensible as that. So you get a dead world with only guys that hate you in it, and maybe there were cool people here before, and you can find out about them, but they're not here anymore.
Because they're really expensive and hard to make fun.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Fuck those guys. Yeah. Man, I'm just going to shoot them.
Yeah.
They suck.
So yeah. That's what I think.
They run away awkwardly.
That's what I think about why there's not more of that stuff. Yep. But I mean, even some of the games that he described, like for instance, Mirror's Edge, like that is not actually a good example, because
that's
a 100% depopulated world.
Yeah,
but
aesthetically, it's very clean.
The aesthetic sold him on this seems to be a populous world because there are people waxing the floors,
and, exactly. Right.
But none of them are here,
right.
You know. So I mean, that's another another potential compromise of like at least not make it look like the place hasn't fallen apart.
Right.
Everybody's not here for a reason, but you're in a world where all those people are a block over outside of the police cordon or whatever.
I mean, I think Brink wants to do that. I don't think they've shown anything from the actual main city proper in that game, but I think it wants to depict that kind of city.
They're only showing the junkyard stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Which is off the not actually on that same landmass. It's off the coast.
Hmm.
But yeah. Video games.
Yep.
I think
Question, video game question asker, man.
.org.
Video game
/ at
/ game.
Period.
Dot museum.
/ HTML.
Man, did you guys
see
the Canon Corporation is filing for a top level domain?
Yeah, you can do that now. They seem to be the first people of note to actually be going and buying them on TLD.
That's hardcore.
Doug suggested they start selling them to nerds, which I think is hilarious.
Funny.
So you could buy StarWars.canon.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Also, if someone could like actually launch an initiative that would take that shit off of the real Wikipedia and relegate it to .canon, then that would be great.
I actually don't agree with that.
Really?
I think Wikipedia should add more shit into it.
More just stupid crap about this guy who was in the 18th millionth Star Wars book who appears on page 93.
A wiki is structurally capable of holding a huge amount of information, and there's people who administrate Wikipedia are all about just deleting shit all over the place. So
Chris is just annoyed by the existence of canon.
Well, that's part of it, but it's also that it seems like Wikipedia editors have really ridiculous biases. Like, they will actually claim things are not notable when they're far more notable than some bullshit Star Wars character.
But
that
the solution to that shouldn't be to throw the Star Wars stuff off. It should be to put the other stuff
in. Well, if it's actually not notable, that should be the solution. I mean, Wikipedia has notability guidelines
that are not
followed.
So you guys have followed us all the way down the rabbit hole. We are having a conversation about the editing policies of Wikipedia
online right now. There are a huge amount of discussions
on a video game podcast.
About
so you guys have you're at the end of the line. You've reached the fucking singularity of nerdy shit.
Sorry,
and I apologize.
Wikipedia is actively deleting a whole bunch of stuff about indie games and open source software right now, and it really ticks me off because I think that those things are perfectly relevant. Idle Thumbs is a video game podcast on the fucking internet where you download it through a stupid RSS feed. This is like, what? I'm going to talk about Wikipedia for a second. Connection lost. This podcast is over.
Thanks for listening.
Fuck everyone.
We hate you.
Video game.
Idle Thumbs is recorded in front of a live studio audience at Massive Aardvark Incorporated.
When we get to 50 episodes of this one, if we do, we should start over with one again and call it an Idle Thumbs podcast. Or like...
an Idle Thumbs experience.
Right, like podcast at Mark Idle Thumbs, the worst.
Yeah, right. Cast at the... like / cast.
Right.
Like at dot thumbs. Like...
Terrible.
I hate that shit. And everyone does it.
Yeah. Cast.thumbs /
right.
Pod.
Pod.
I like the idea.
With like the little two, like squared two above it.
Oh, terrible. Steve, you're fucking it up.
I remember the thing to do.
It's...
What's going on, Silence?
No!
Your new nickname is Silence.
Silence. No, I'm just wondering what you think about this.
Silence!
Oh, shut up.
What?
No, be quiet.
Worst name.
My name should be Silence in this fucking podcast series. I have nothing to say anymore. I hate you.
Okay.
We can just replace you.
Yeah. Get famous in here. We replace Silence with fucking famous.
Moving up.
Silence.
You're hated.
Not by you, though. You wouldn't be. I wouldn't be that by you.
This is...
Oh, where's that timpani drum guy over in the back?
He's usually here.
He died.
Golly.
This episode is in memory of our timpani drummer guy who died.
Yeah, it sucks.
He was killed.